Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to the Man's Voice. I have a lot of things to discuss today. Everybody is on the line. I have my panelists, and you know, one of these days we're going to have to do more introductions like we did before, but there's a lot to talk about. So I want to start off with, and for those of you that are listening, if you'd like to call in and get involved with any of the conversations that we have, you can by dialing 646-668-8740, and you will be involved. There's some noise coming from one of our panelists. I think that's Don, but we just have to deal with it tonight because there's too much to talk about. And I want to start the conversation with something that I want to start the conversation with something. Wait a minute. Let me try to get rid of some of this noise. Okay. Wow. I don't know what that is, who that is. Okay, I want to start the conversation with something that I think that we need to have a conversation to talk about. That we talk around it a lot, but I want to get involved in it. I want to ask the question, why has race become such a big issue now? We went through the 60s, and we did civil rights, and we did a lot of things, and we were going to race has become a big issue, and it's an elephant in the room issue that nobody really wants to talk about because they don't want to see it on either side. But I think it's something we need to discuss just to start the dialogue nationally, so we'll know how to fix it. Any thoughts on that? Anybody got any thoughts on that, Bruce? What are your thoughts?
Well, it's not the only reason, but one of the big components you and I talked about it a little bit the other day, so let me share it with the audience and our panel. I think when we get a lot of people of different ethnic groups, different races, different nationalities, different ways, walks of life, and you meet almost one-on-one or in very small groups, we tend to work out our differences in a logical, informative, non-threatening way for the most part. I can say that in my life, it's been that way consistently. But when we get groups against groups, a certain size group, or outside people that try to stir it up on from all different directions, it always seems to become confrontational, and it doesn't seem to be getting any better. It seems to be getting, in some regards, worse. I'm a firm believer that the one-on-one, the person-to-person that have the issues, can work things out in a civil way for the most part.
Mr. Wiggins, are you there?
Yes. You asked why was race such an issue today?
Yes.
Is that what you asked?
Yes. We went through the civil rights. People got killed. People got watered down. And not just African-Americans, but it's just like race is a big issue right now. What is causing this? What do we do as men in our families to explain to our families what's going on, how to be aware of it, and to do something about it, if anything?
You know, David, that's a very good question, a very good question. And, you know, it boils down to unresolved guilt among the Caucasian race, and long-term anger in the black race. We went through the 60s, you're absolutely right, but it happened way before then, and we never dealt with it. And you got the white community with the guilty feeling that their forefathers did, in which they had no control over. And then you got the black community angry for what happened to our forefathers, and we had no control over it. So we've never dealt with the situation. We've just been putting Band-Aids on cancer. And I think what we have to do is just sit down, put love on paper first, and deal with it. We can't keep pushing it under the rug. Alcoholic. If I quit drinking, I don't drink anymore, but I still steal horses. And stealing the horses is what made me drink.
So all right. That
is.
So what do we do about this? What do we do as a family leader about this issue? This is a big issue right now. Harold, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, what do you think?
And I agree. Just like I said before, that everybody is so proud of their history, good, bad, or indifferent, that we're not willing to let it go on all races. So we as, and me personally, as an African-American man, I must sit down and tell my family the true meaning of where we come from and then where we're going. We're not there yet, but society has made it seem, though, that we are there. As somebody mentioned, sweeping it under the rug. Racism has been swept under the rug, but now it's sticking its head back out to where it needs to be addressed again. We need to have another civil rights movement to address the issue. Once those leaders during that civil rights movement, we gained a little bit, everybody thought it was okay. But then you see we're going right back to the mass killing of black people, to the disrespect of the president who is African-American, to the different cultures now hating each other on social media with spews of venom from both sides, the Caucasian, the Hispanics, the whites, the Asians. So everybody is now infiltrated with some sense of hate towards that other that nobody's prospering or really talking about it.
Well, you know, the racism piece is a big piece with our Muslim families now also. And I think it's something we need to deal with because this is rising up. It seems to be getting bigger, not less. It seems to be police officers against everybody. It seems to be, you know, Muslims trying to convince everyone they're not like the people that are killing. They're not ISIS. So we have a lot of messy stuff going on within our nation, within our neighborhoods. What should we do? I mean, come on, Ron, what do you think?
Well, first of all, let me say that, you know, this country was built on immigration. People are here from all over the world, and that's a great thing, and at the same time, it's a disadvantage in a lot of ways. If you look at our education system compared to other countries, there's pros and cons to that. And, you know, when you're dealing with a bunch of different ethnicities as well as nationalities, you run the risk of people not agreeing on a lot of things, and that's where we are today. And I do agree with what everybody has said, that it looks like we're going backwards, and I'm not sure I understand why. And going back to the African American, the race issue, let me start off by saying, you know, I think that was a horrible, horrible chapter in the history of the United States. What I am trying to understand, and you know, several of you asked the question, how do we deal with it? I'm not quite sure how to deal with it, but I don't know how other countries, for example, Colombia, and the U.S. was not the only country in the world that had slavery. You know, lots of other countries, including Colombia, had slavery. And I just went there recently, and I see that I guess you can't call them African Americans. The black people in Colombia get along, at least from the outside, from the perspective of a tourist, they get along beautifully with you know, the whites or the Indians or whatever other races are there. Everybody seems to get along beautifully. So I'm not sure why it's different in the U.S., and I can't quite pinpoint my finger on that.
Yeah, your reference to Colombia, most people in America do not know that Colombia has more slaves than the United States of America.
I didn't hear that. You were breaking up, David.
No. What I said was Colombia at one time had more slaves than the United States, but most Americans don't know that.
Right, and so did Cuba, and so did
some
other countries.
We just walked around a long way. This is Frank. Can you hear me?
Yes, Frank, we can hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hey, I just wanted to tell you all that I don't agree with the fact that the other countries don't have a similar problem in regard to racism that we have. It if you take Brazil, for instance, it looks good on the surface. We look pretty good on the surface. They have probably a lesser problem because they integrated more people into the system a lot earlier than us. But they have similar problems with poverty people, particularly people of color. And I don't think the situation is bad as it's being made out to be. I think it's just an upheaval because the population is shifting from a majority population to a majority minority population.
All right. Bruce, can you answer that question, talk on that response?
Well, listening to each one of us talk to the audience and to ourselves, we're still stuck in, we're not talking about how to fix things. We're talking about what's made us feel the way we feel. Not that that isn't important, but it doesn't move us forward. I mean, whether it's guilt or anger or a combination of both, it's this guy or that guy or this woman or that woman, we've got to get to a point, and that's not dismissing what's happened or how people feel, but if we continue to just talk about the injustices or whatever, we're not coming up with a solution, and we're not going to get there by just talking about that. I would rather see ways where, you know, one solution might be where we make a venue or we create an opportunity, let's call it, where people of different backgrounds, different anger, different guilt, different color, different whatever, get to talk to each other, really sit down and talk to each other. And we're not, for the most part, we're not doing that. In a lot of ways. And that's the way I think a lot of these solutions are going to sprout from and create opportunities to move forward. Just continually talking about why things were unfair. We all have certain things in our lives that are very unfair that might seem catastrophic to another person or trivial. But I've had a number of things happen in my life. It's got nothing to do with race, that were very catastrophic. And I could have just said, you know, the heck with it, I'm going to be miserable the rest of my life, or I can pick myself up by the bootstraps and find a solution. Well, I think we've got to move more towards discussing solutions than what the problems were and why the injustice or whatever, which is very real, happened. We got to get to a point of talking forward, not backward.
So what are some of the solutions that you might have in mind?
Well, one thing I think could be in a very simple way, gentlemen, and I have direct experience with this. One of the formats I had at a conference a while ago was called a roundtable conference. We've all heard that term, roundtables. But what we did different, and let's apply it to the situation here, We had an event. We had a bunch of round tables in a room. We put different people at different tables or a different person at each table, either representing a different part of this problem that we're talking about right now or a different aspect or a different race or however we want to do it. And then the people come in and you, in a good way, you sit down with people that either you don't understand or have not really honestly talked with. and you start having conversations with people you normally don't have an opportunity to talk with. And you'd be amazed, absolutely amazed, what can happen by doing that. I have personally been involved with that before, and it's extraordinary what happens when you get that kind of dialogue going. That's an example. You stay there at a table for a few minutes, you move on to another one, and you kind of custom make what works for you and who you want to talk to or converse with that maybe you haven't ever conversed with before to get better understanding of what's going on.
And I agree. That's something that we have to do. And it's like when we're in our personal lives versus our professional lives, we tend to stick with the people who we relate to. And one of my things is I always go out and intermingle with the opposite race just so I can understand what they're dealing with, what I'm dealing with, so we can have a common ground of knowledge of one another. It's not to just say, hey, I've done it, but it's actually to learn. And I think that's one of the things
right.
we have to do. And if you go to
Absolutely.
Schools, especially those schools who are of mixed diversity, you're in class with different people every day. But how often do our kids talk to those different people? How often do we talk to those people? I was in a company, and David and I worked for the same company in Dallas. The black folks would hang together, and the white folks would do the same. So it got to a point where one of the CEOs was like, why is the black caucus always going to lunch with each other? Why don't you invite some white people? And we came back to him and said, how come the white people don't invite us? So we have to be more open and honest to actually learn about those other cultures and be genuinely interested in what they have to say and what they're about.
Absolutely. I agree with that, and that it's not to say one's right and one's wrong. That's not it at all. It just opens your horizons to get a better understanding of the people that are around you.
All right, so 40 years ago, the military started the same process that you guys are talking about. We mandated that everyone have to attend these two-week sessions. Some of us went to three or four sessions over a period of time. And what we did, we threw everything out on the table. We got some ugly moments out of the deal. And we brought people together at the end of the period of time. Now, everybody would have checked out on day one or day two, would have left there. And they called each other's names. So all the prejudices that people had just got laid out on the table. That was so we could work together. We could stop bombing each other and doing hostile actions toward each other. So, you know, the civilian community has avoided that. But fortunately, there are people who have been in the armed forces. And if you go in the military, you'll see a completely different situation than you see in our normal civilian life.
All right. Different in what way?
Well, first of all, you know, I talked to a Japanese young chief petty officer, and one of the things she told me when I mentioned something to her, she said that she's in the Coast Guard, and she said, hey, there is no difference between man or woman. And we were talking about doing something, and I was saying, well, I hadn't had a drink or anything, because I don't drink. But I said, yeah, there is a difference. And so, but the point is her training has basically train her that there is no difference between a man or a woman, black or white, Japanese or Korean, or any of that. So you have to basically come up with some belief systems that's different than the American belief system that you grew up with, all right? And I think once you accept that belief system and practice on it, then you're going to find that you're going to start doing it. For instance, you know, people, if you go to a ship right now, go to a ship, go to a base and look at it, you'll see the ship is pretty integrated system of people, women, men, and different colors. That doesn't really come into play. So that's how it's been.
Right.
One of the processes that happened, the early processes that happened was, is that there weren't any black products in the system on the shelves of a military basis. so no one thought of these people when they were, you know, having products. And so you've got to be culturally aware of other people as well, their food, their things like that, and you've got to have some type of appreciation. And you can only get that through education and through changing your belief system.
Okay. I know we've talked about this conversation before, and I think we're probably going to need to bring it up again some other time soon, but one of the things that I noticed, maybe we are not, you know, we're trying to figure out how do we as men and head of our families try to encourage our families to be more open to accepting other people. And one of the things I noticed is we as a group of people, no matter who we are, don't socialize even with our neighbors anymore. I remember as a kid, we knew our neighbors. We would take over food, and you'd see tinfoil papers going across the street and all that kind of thing. And then I've noticed over the years, you don't see that anymore. You don't know your neighbors. We don't know the people that live next door to us. We don't talk. We might say hello, and then we're gone. So I think there's a lot going on right now in terms of knowing who we are, knowing our neighbors, knowing people and giving people respect. What's happening? What's going on? Anybody got any opinions? I know that you live. I know that when I was in Miami, and the people came from the different islands. If you lived in the Haitian neighborhood or the Jamaican neighborhood, you saw people still communicating. You saw food going back and forth across the street. But in the American neighborhood, I didn't see that. What is that all about? I know Ron, you live in Miami. Tell us, what do you see down there?
Well, it's a very interesting question. What I see is that people are so busy that, you know, it's not that you don't want to talk to your neighbors because, you know, you obviously when you see them say hello and the common courtesies, but I think everybody is just so busy with life. I think everybody right now is busier than ever that we really don't have time to really socialize with the neighbors as we would like maybe. But what's interesting, I do have to point out that, and we've talked about this before, that I have an issue going on with one of my next door neighbors, and you know, trying to get a restraining order. Long story, and I won't bore all of you with the details again. But what the reason I bring that up is that now that I'm having a problem, quote unquote problem, when something negative is going on, the rest of my neighbors can't wait to talk to me, and they talk to me for 15, 20, 30 minutes. So, you know, I don't understand. You know, maybe it's just that they don't want to socialize when you know, everything is going right, but, you know, everybody is attracted to negativity. Like, you know, when you watch the news, you know, all they cover is negative things. I don't know. But, you know, now I'm talking to my neighbors more than I ever have.
All right, somebody who doesn't live there, what about you, Bruce, here in Michigan? What do you see? Do you see that going on?
When I was growing up here in Michigan and Illinois, those are my two childhood locations, like you, people were out and about. They might sit on a porch or walk down the street. You knew most, if not all, of your neighbors, and I'm wondering if, this isn't the only reason, but part of it, just listening to everybody and in some of the mentoring I've done, if the IT generation, which I know will not go away, but if the IT generation is turning us more into sideline observers instead of on-field participants. And that concerns me because you sit on the sideline and watch from behind your curtain or from behind your door instead of coming out and engaging the smartphones. We've talked about this before. The smartphones are taking us, eliminating that whole beautiful kind of communication that enriches your life. It's just turning it into an automatic, robotic kind of response, void of emotion. And I think that is a sorry state of affairs. So the causes, like you said, we're too busy. I think the IT thing, when it's abused, is a big factor as well. And we just, we're getting to the point where we just don't, we're nervous or scared of our neighbors. Like you said, Ron, they all watched you out there having a little bit of a conflict. And as soon as the conflict disappeared, they all wanted to talk to you and find out what happened. What's going on? Tell me.
Exactly. But
they didn't want to come out and be part of a conversation on one side or the other. It doesn't matter. They watch from the sidelines. And I don't know why that is. I think it's a multiple of things.
Well, we have a caller coming in from Carson, California. Michael, do you have any comments you'd like to make?
Yeah, absolutely. Hi, thanks for having me on. I want to piggyback off what that gentleman just said. I think it has a lot to do with technology. I mean, when we were growing up, when you were growing up, we didn't have a Twitter account. We didn't have a Facebook page. We didn't have cell phones. So the millennial generation now, that's all they know. They don't know what it means to go out and talk to someone and get to know someone and introduce yourself. Hi, my name is such and such. They think it's appropriate to just get their Twitter handle and send them a Twitter. So I think technology has a lot to do with what's going on. In my personal opinion, it's a perfect example of legislation needs to catch up with technology. Because I think the technology is somewhat, in so many ways, can be detrimental to what's going on in society right now.
Well, anybody want to handle that? Don, where are you on that subject?
I agree. Technology has gone to another level. There used to be a time when we would walk next door and say, hello, my name is Don, and my name is Jim. I'm glad to be your neighbor. And now we text people. I mean, you could be at a dinner table with family members, and instead of communicating, they're texting. It's where technology has come into play. We've got to adjust to it because it's not going anywhere. As far as the differences of nationalities, in a lot of countries, you don't see the difference because of race. It's economics. It's class racism. The have and the have-nots. So we've got some issues that we have to deal with. This is a great topic.
Carol, where are you on this subject? Carol,
I agree.
Are you there?
Technology has hindered us. And as I mentioned before, my daughter was looking to go to Baylor University. And the counselor said that he and some of the other admissions counselors discredited a lot of students because when they wrote their entrance essay, they were using text messaging abbreviation. So, you know, text messaging, Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, Instagram have crippled us. And in terms to race, we will hide behind a hashtag without going to speak to somebody. You know, our true views will come out behind a post where normally we're sitting in a corporate America or sitting at home, and we're not able to express that. But we will sit behind a tweet, a Facebook post, an Instagram message, more so than we would talk to somebody. And that's where a lot of young people.
No, I'm sorry. I totally agree with you. I just want to piggyback on that a little bit. My daughter, she's 16, and just yesterday she texted me, "Are you dad? Are you gonna come pick me up?" And she puts U, the letter U, instead of spelling Y-O-U. And I checked her on that. And she checked me back like, no, Dad, you're old. Nobody spells it out anymore. and I couldn't say anything. I was like, okay, I guess I am old here. So it's technology is really, really pushing this society in a different direction. And I think, once again, our leaders need to look at that because I don't think it's going in a positive direction in a certain way.
It's pushing us into a silo to where human interaction will be null and void in a couple of years. Because if you can sit at a table and text somebody who is 2 feet away, our kids now, they want to go into their room. You know, my daughter wants her space. My son wants his space. They want to go in their rooms, and then they'll text, "What's for dinner? Bring your behind out of the room."
Yeah.
So
So, you know, a lot of, you know, technology is good. And we talked about before, all these kids know is technology. They come out of the womb now working iPads and iPods and iPhone 6 Pluses and all that. I think it was Don said his grandson or granddaughter can work an iPad better than him. What was that, Frank? So we have to make sure that we don't let our kids or society hide behind social media. We need to get out, interact, and talk with each other. That's a lost art today with young people, is interacting and public speaking.
I totally agree with you, but don't you think it's like trying to put the toothpaste back in the tube?
No, Michael. Michael, it's Mike, right?
Yeah.
Mike, no. The reason I say that respectfully is our generation, a number of people on the panelists, or I should say those of more mature age, like myself, I'm thinking, talking to you, Mike, that, and you answer if I'm on the wrong track or right track, that I need to get out in the public and maybe talk to city officials about creating an opportunity to get more dialogue, personal one-on-one dialogue with someone, or go to my local church and say, what kind of groups do we have that mix up the races and the ethnicities so that they talk, or go some here or there. And the Man's Voice panelists say, what can we do to help? We have to go out then into the into your community and say, why is it we don't know our neighbors? Or neighbors, let's have a potluck or something, for only to the fact that I'm trying to instigate something as a solution to turn it the other way. Because as somebody said, we're going to get to a generation here shortly that they're using the technology. It's not going to go away, but the problem is we're abusing the technology and they don't know what they're missing. They really don't know what they're missing, as you said.
What do we do as a group of men to try to explain to, say, a 19, 20, 22 to 25-year-old father who has young children growing up, how do we tell them, what do we suggest to them to do to help change this mood? Because I would think somebody 25 or something, probably where they are. As a matter of fact, there are commercials on TV now where you see the kid trying to cook a waffle or something and the mother's texting him from across the room, I'm going to eat your waffle or something like that. But, you know, the commercials are even going there. So what do we do as grown men to try to tell, I mean, technology is taking over, but I don't think it's going a direction that we as mentors think it should go. So what should we be doing to help those new families coming about to help make this touch and feel other people or talk to other people?
Well, I think we as adults, as leaders, or as men, head of household, I think we're battling against Apple. We're battling against Google. We're battling against Facebook. And I don't think we can win that battle. I don't think we can. I mean, Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple, he loves the fact that technology is taking over. Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO of Facebook, he loves the fact that technology is taking over because it increases their bottom line. So I don't think there's really much we can do because we're fighting. Was this a David versus Goliath situation?
So you're saying we're stuck. But I would think that we could do with some legislation. So I would think it needs to be, and something that we always come back to is we have to elect the right politicians. We keep going there. Are we not doing that? Are the people we're putting in office to represent us, are they being bought out by something else, by some other, you know, lobbyists and things? Or are we just all confused? I don't know.
Well, you don't understand.
I mean, go ahead.
Well, in regards to what you said about the legislation, the lawmakers are bought and sold by Apple, Facebook. So they're electing the right people in their mind, yeah. But to us, no, we're not electing the right people.
So, Ron, what do you have on this conversation?
I personally don't think legislation would solve anything. I think the root of the problem is so deep and so ingrained in our daily lives.
I mean, the times when families used to get together and sit down and have dinners together, I don't even see it in my own family anymore. I mean, maybe when I was a little kid, but I see families nowadays and they, you know, they go out for fast food perhaps, or, you know, they don't spend any quality time. And that, to me, is where it all begins, you know, at the family level. So if you're not having that social interaction in your family core unit, you know, it's not going to translate to any place else in your life. I mean, how many of us have gone inside an elevator? And I work at a school, so, you know, I'm talking about primarily young kids, but also the adults in the school. And as soon as you walk in an elevator, everybody is looking at yourself. Nobody even looks at each other.
Okay. We've just gotten a lot of something on the line here. But anyway, Harold, what do you think? Where's Frank? Are you there?
Frank is here.
Okay. Yeah. What is your comments on this subject?
Well, I'm probably negative on it, but I think that we're making excuses. Technology, you know, has been with some people for a lot longer than it has been with the open public. I think that I agree with the family that you've got to start off with the family unit, showing courtesies, difference, and love. And I think love is the basic groundwork that needs to be done all over. You can't, you know, it's like the Pope said the other day, you can't call yourself a Christian if you're going to build a wall, all right? And you can't meet your neighbor if you're going to have a wall. You know, there's some people that go out, I've seen some people that go out in neighborhoods and bring pastries to their neighbors during Christmas, a pie for each one of them. They're on a block. And I know a guy that does that. Black, white, pink, or yellow, everybody gets a pie, okay? So you can break down hatred, you know, by sitting down and having just a simple cup of coffee with your neighbor or your coworker. And it shows your concern, your empathy, et cetera. If you don't show empathy, of course, nobody cares about you and you don't care about them. So the technology thing, the reason why I brought it up, for instance, the GPS is an example. You know, in the 60s, I served on Polaris submarines, which are old nuclear submarines. And, of course, that's what we use to be able to do our device, GPS. The VCR and other products that have been on the market for a long time. We also had those products in the 60s, you know, the military did. And part of that came from the military and NASA's ingenuity. So I think that we're just making excuses. We're not grounded in fundamental things like love and respect. And if you don't have respect, you don't show respect, then all you're going to get is missiles back and forth. You got a war going on. You know, the fact that you can have a presidential contender who basically says that he's going to build a wall and he's going to do some bad things to other people, it's just going to keep us fighting. We're not only going to fight with ourselves, we're going to fight with other people. And along those ethnic lines and color and racial barriers are not going to be broken down.
I think
we got hope to us as a group, but the hope is when we die off. Okay? So, all right. So part of the problem is us, ourselves, the ones that are on the line.
All right.
Let me say this real quick.
Yeah.
A lot, I agree with everything you just said. I just want to add that I always said that America was built, unfortunately. America was built on racism. It was. America is going to fall by racism. Racism is going to destroy this company, this country, the same way it built this country. And I look at what's going on now, how divided our country is in racism. I've never seen it so divided, the way it's divided right now.
Okay, so Bruce, can you take that the United States is built on racism and it's going to destroy itself by that?
Well, I would say this as an answer to that is some of the key real bona fide leaders in the black race, key bona fide leaders in the white race, and every other race you can think of need to lead the way. I think we've got bad examples more than enough to count in all different shapes, sizes, and colors. And until we do that, I think it's I wouldn't totally agree with the statement that we're going to go out the way we came in. It's life is a matter of choices and responsibilities. I'm not implying that they're necessarily easy. They're not. The good ones usually are, excuse my French, darn difficult. But until we demand that others that are real leaders stand up and lead, and we put pressure on them to do so, we're not headed in the right direction. And I, for one, even though, like some of the others said, I'm not going to be on this face of the earth all that much longer, I would like to go out swinging, so to speak, making sure that I do what I can to make it better, even if it's just a little better. And I think we've got too many, even good people, and I'll put myself in that group as well, that we talk a good story, but we got to go out and start doing the good story, putting the pressure on or showing the examples or talking to people to create opportunities. We're just talking about it. We need to do it.
All right. I think that was a comment that we didn't have to bring up again another time about America coming in and us going out. But we got about 15 minutes left. There are people on the line, and those of you that might want to call in and give us a conversation or talk on the subject matter, you can get it at 646-668-8740. And some of the times when you call in, you'll see where it says a lot of things, but just call in, let us know you're on the line, and we will bring you into the phone to have a conversation with us.
I just wanted to contribute to two things that you should be aware of. Recent acquaintances that I've got through this nonprofit organization that I'm familiar with, that affiliated with, they have each of those people have done something special. One of them makes a lot of money and lives in an impoverished neighborhood, which is perhaps phenomenally minority. The other one comes out of Chicago and took her pick of churches, which is predominantly a minority population of churches, which she's attended, let's say, greater than 20 years. Okay? So what happens is that's the type of actions that break down the normal BS that we have, that we're confronted with on a daily basis, okay? And you're a lot more loving and powerful if you're familiar with what's going on in a given community. And you're there, you know, as much as you can be. So that's the last. I just wanted to contribute that to you, that I did meet two people in the last 30 days that have those type of affiliations, which I guess we used to call that street cred.
All right. Any comments on that? Harold, where are you on that?
I agree. It's difficult for me. It's just, like you said, the street cred and us going out the way we came in. Really, it's a truth to that, because America was built on the back of people who are not from America. And the way we've been mistreated, all race is going to come back to bite itself in the behind.
All right.
Let me just end with this. What I meant when I said racism has built our country, racism is going to destroy our country, racism is a noose around the neck of America right now. It really is. In regards to what the leading presidential candidate said in regards to the Muslims, it's not just race in regards to black-white anymore. It's Muslim versus Jew versus African-American versus Asian. It's a bigger argument. It's a bigger fight now, that racism fight. It's not just black and white like it was, like we were built on. I think it's gotten really, really out of control now in this country, the racism problem. And I think it's destroying our country.
Don, are you in?
Yes.
Okay. What are your comments on this subject?
Well, you know, like I said earlier, I said this about maybe when we first started, we've gotten into a religious war, Muslims against Christians, blacks against whites. It's just gotten out of hand, really. And with the have and have nots economically, we're going through some different situations in racism when it comes to black and white, and it all stems between the economic disparity. I think that's the biggest issue right there. When you look at the economic disparity between the black and white, that's the biggest issue there. Because, I mean, economically, a lot of blacks were deprived of economic gain years ago. And the way you solve any situation is, first of all, you have to admit that there was a problem. And there was a problem 400 years ago. But no one has come forward and said, hey, listen, I'm sorry for what happened with my forefathers years ago. I had nothing to do with it, but I'm sorry. Let's move forward. What do we have to do to move forward? And then the black say, I accept your apology. You didn't have anything to do with it. I love you, my brother. Let's move forward. And that's never been done.
All right.
And David? And
yeah, go ahead.
I want to add, and you can't do that on an iPhone. You got to do that face-to-face.
Amen. You said it. You can't do it on an iPhone. It's got to be person to person, flesh to flesh, spirit to spirit.
And if we don't get more person to person, I don't need to say anymore.
Bruce, did you say that?
Yes, I did. I couldn't agree with you more.
You are absolutely right. Bruce, when that's done, face to face,
okay.
We're going to see a big change in America. And you're right. You can't do it on television. You got to do it face-to-face, one family at a time, one neighborhood at a time, one city at a time, one state at a time, one country at a time.
You
it's
got to
be done right. That way.
You have to feel the other person's anguish, fear, pain, joy, whatever it is sitting across from you when you talk to them.
Exactly. And
absolutely,
that's never been done. Once that's done, there is no way I can continually say what happened in the past. Okay, your granddaddy did that to me. Your great-great-great-great-great-granddaddy did that to me. So what? It's done. Let's move forward.
Absolutely, but one more thing I want to interject with that. The apology needs to be there, but there's also a debt. And that has a lot to do with why America doesn't want to apologize to the African-American community, because the apology is going to come with, okay, there's a debt owed to us. And that debt needs to be get 200 years of free labor and not cut a check for the debt that was accumulated throughout those 200 years. So
well, see, that's why
mm-hmm.
You're right. The economical situation is the major elephant. That's the big elephant in the room.
And certain members of America don't want to have the conversation because they know the conversation ends with, yes, I'm sorry for what my ancestors did to yours, and yes, we owe you money. There's a debt there. And that debt has a lot to do with why they don't want to have the conversation, because there's no
exactly.
way they can argue that there isn't a valid debt. There's a valid
exactly.
debt in the African American community.
They will pay for everything else, but for some reason, when it comes to the African American community, it does not want to be addressed. I don't
exactly.
want 40 acres of land. I don't want it. I want them to acknowledge what they've done and will continue to do to African Americans, taking jobs out of community, keeping your community down to where they have to rob, steal, and kill. Now, granted, it's our fault as African American men that we're not going out here mentoring these young men. It's our fault that we're not going out here telling them, hey, pull your pants up. Go get a trade, but the healing has to start first so we can go move past that. So once the healing starts or the apology, then we can get back to the street we can get back to our young men, get back to our families. But with the jobs being gone, crime rampant, drugs infiltrating our communities, we will never get what we deserve until we start cleaning up ourselves.
I agree with that.
I totally agree with that.
Go ahead, Michael. Go ahead.
I totally agree with that, but sometimes I want to push back just a little bit because sometimes it bothers me when they make the African American man like it's their fault. Like the little kid is sagging his pants, him pulling his pants up is not going to stop him from getting shot by a racist cop. So sometimes the answer isn't just pull your pants up. It's a systematic problem there. And in regards to the debt that's owed to us, Dr. King, if you listen to the I Have a Dream speech in full context, Dr. King talked about that debt to America that's owed to the African-American community. He mentions that debt in his I Have a Dream speech, but they never bring that up. Whenever they talk about the I Have a Dream speech, all they talk about is the one little part, I Have a Dream, the part where Dr. King was talking about the debt that's owed to African-American community.
All right. I want to move on a little bit because we've only got a few minutes left in the show, but I want to change the mood a little bit because there was something that happened that I thought was pretty interesting. I was looking at the news the other night, and there was a young kid in Michigan who was going to have a birthday party. And so he asked his mother, he said, you know, the police officers in our community get such a bad rep. Why don't we invite police officers to this party? And so he sent out an invitation and it kind of went national invitation. And so they were expecting 10 or 15 police officers to come to the party, but the party ended up with about 50 people. Most police officers from all over the nation came to join this little boy's party and said they were happy that someone recognized them, you know, the good cops from the back out. They were glad somebody recognized the good police officers and threw them a party or wanted to have a party. So there were police officers from everywhere, and it just so happens that this little boy did this in Michigan.
Lance?
First of all, the parents of that little boy need to be very proud of the little boy to even think about that, but for the parents to host it, I think we have to say that was pretty good. Any thoughts on that? Do you have any thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I personally saw what you're talking about, and it reminds me of something. I've known a few newspaper editors in my day, even though papers seem to be disappearing. And I've often asked them, why couldn't we have a good news section? I don't care if you bury it in the back of the paper or put it on the front page. A good news section would go a long way. He says, well, it won't sell papers. I said, I beg to differ. It would sell more papers than you could imagine. People are so tired of hearing all the you-know-what going on in the world. They would love to hear about someone being helped across the street, a young boy recognizing the police, a mother doing this and that. I think that would be something very simple to initiate and start showing people that things can move in a better way, in a better direction, and start that dialogue. And yet, we hear from them, no, that wouldn't sell papers. All it sells is, pain and suffering. I don't believe that for a minute. So maybe as our panelists, we've said as panelists, maybe we, if we thought something like that's a good idea, we need to kind of push that along and try and get somebody, even if it's a local tiny little paper, to do something like that.
All right, Ron, what do you think? Hello, Ron, are you there? Okay, then Don, what are your thoughts on that?
Bruce, you're absolutely right. A good news section in the newspaper would be great, but not only in the newspaper, because I think the newspaper is a dying breed, except for the electronic part of it. But if radio stations and television stations would once an hour and say, this is a good news special, give it 60 seconds, it would be a great start. But the thing is, negative sales in America. If it's negative,
It's sellable.
So, Don, it's up to you and I, Frank, and Ron, and everybody else on our panel to convince them, hey, try it. It just might work. And, try to kind of push them to at least give it a try.
You know, you just brought up a very beautiful topic to me. I'm in the advertising business, and I might just put together a 60-second infomercial and say, this good news special is being brought to you by Bruce.
Yeah, right.
or any other company.
Yes.
I think it would go a long way with that.
You're absolutely right.
Just like pain in your body wears you down if it's relentless, well, crime and bad news does the same thing, gentlemen, if you think about it.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, I have not watched the news in like 6 months because the first 30 minutes of every newscast, XYZ got shot, XYZ got murdered, XYZ got burglarized, XYZ is laying off 50,000 companies, XYZ, something of that nature. So in order for me not to have that negativity in me, I choose not to watch it.
And you know, it's going to be more apparent as we get closer into the election, where the news is going to have dominance in America of any program on radio or television. And any time a man can say and go up against the Pope, that's a strong statement to say we're going to build a wall opposed to build a bridge.
Yeah.
Right. And that was something that the Trump camp took as a dig against them. But here's something that's mind-boggling. Donald Trump wins the South Carolina Republican primary. What in the world is going on? Are we ready for a Trump victory for president? Wow. What do you think, Frank? What do you think about that?
Well, I don't think we're going to see that as a president, and I think that what's going to happen is we will get a chance to see is the number of people who identify with him. And my understanding is that there are a lot of people in America right now, that particularly the Republican Party, that are very upset and angry at politicians. Trump is a businessman, so they want to give a businessman an opportunity to really mess it up well, because I think the politicians have done just that. So I think a lot of people don't agree with what he says and how he says it, but I think they're willing to try to make that difference and the change, particularly if they come from a Republican viewpoint. But I don't think he'll be our next president.
When we first started this show, we thought that it would never get to where it is now. We never thought he was going to South Carolina primary or anywhere. We thought it was, most of the people who were on the left side of the panel side, that was just a joke. But it looks like it's a joke that's coming to fruition. I mean, he took the primary in South Carolina, and I don't know where that's going.
Yeah, South Carolina is South Carolina, but I don't think you can win an election when you're against women, when you're against minority populations, Muslim, Hispanics, which, by the way, the Hispanic population makes up a large segment of our population. And then, again, if you take on the Pope, I think you're in a losing proposition for sure. But we'll see how it goes out, and I'll let you go on with your questioning.
All right, we only have a short time. We only like a minute left, or less than a minute left. But I just wanted to thank everyone for calling in. It was very busy tonight on the thing of people coming in and going out. And I guess we'll talk about this again next week. But remember, for everyone who's listening, to call in listen to us every Sunday at 6:00. You always can join the show 646-668-8740. One of the things we wanted to end up with was that, you know, the press has become so opinionated, but we're out of time. It's 7 o'clock, so I want to pick up with that next week. So for the panel, think about that. For those of you that have called in and are listening to the show, it's 7 o'clock. Thank you very much. And for the panel, thank you for calling in. So talk to you or see you next week. Take care.
David.
Yes.
David. Were
yes.
we supposed to stay on?
Yes, please. All right.
We're so, still on the air, though. Is everybody else on?
Yeah, it looks like it.
Well, I read your memo and it said stay on.
I don't know. I wanted the panel to stay on, but everyone, no, not everyone from the panel looks like they're still there, but the guests are gone.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Okay, so Ron, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. I apologize. I was choking when you called on me a few minutes ago. I could hear you calling on me, but I couldn't stop.
Are you okay, man?
Yeah, I'm still getting over a cold, but I'm okay. Thank you.
Stay with us.
Okay,
you can't go out that way.
Don, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Frank, are you still there? Frank, are you still there? I see you're on. It looks like you're on. Harold, are you
yes,
there?
Yes, I am. This is
Frank.
Yeah, I'm here. Okay, there we go. Okay. What I want to talk about, I want to have a conversation because we never get together to actually talk as a group about the show. I like what's going on, but my whole original thought on the show was to make it more like going into a barbershop or going into car dealership and stuff, and people will, you know, everybody's just talking. I never wanted to lead it or be the – I don't think there should be a host. I think we should just be a group. In my vision, the original thought was – we should be more like a group of men who are just having conversations. It seems that it's gone to really an NPR type show where there's a host who throws out comments and everyone relates to it. But I really don't want to. I don't want it to be where you can figure out who the host is. This should be a host. I want it to really be conversational, like a barbershop. And I really want to try to get with that. And I want to express to everyone. I want you to come in with thoughts and comments, and just let's just make this more like having conversation. Standing, you know, like if I came to your garage and you're working on your car, and everyone from the neighborhood came down, and we all just started talking. I think we need to evolve into that more. And so I wanted to get some comments with how you felt about that, Don. You got any comments on that?
David, excuse me, I'm sorry. I understand your vision, and I understand what you're saying or what you just said, but no, it's kind of difficult without a host because when you're dealing electronically where you're not in the same room with the person, you can't really see them and finish them talking, and electronically you find yourself talking over another person because you don't know when they have ended. And that's something that I'm very cautious of, and I don't ever want to over-talk a person.
Don, I agree, and that was my thought because you'll have three or four people talking at the same time, but the way you do it, David, you say, well, Ron, what are your thoughts? Frank, what are your thoughts? That gives everybody an opportunity to speak. So I would say it's more difficult to do it just open conversation, but more moderated, pointed, and directive helps us a lot with getting our opinions in and not over-talking or over-shouting each other.
Yeah, but everyone knows somebody's on the ground. I think it doesn't matter to me. Go ahead. Yeah.
Isn't this ironic that the very things that we're talking about now are a prime example of what we say the young generation are doing with the IT? We're verifying or we're saying the very same thing, that there's too many things left out of the conversation if we try to have a conversation on a piece of smart equipment instead of face-to-face. And that's nice. Oh, who's on the road?
That's me. Somebody just cut me off.
Uh-oh.
I'm trying to get away from my lane. I'm on my way to a meeting.
Well, be careful out there, Harold. Sounds like you're in a box. Sounds like it's rough out there with you right now.
Yeah.
So what do you think, Ron? Give me your opinion.
Well, I mean, I see your vision, and you know, when you and I first talked originally, I thought it was a great idea to have that kind of free-flowing setup. But I agree with what Don said, that, you know, it's difficult when we can't see each other and all we have is telephones. I mean, we just went through it just a minute ago. Everybody was trying to chime in, and it just became a blurred mess. And then what happens is, you know, because I've tried to chime in a few times, but I don't know when somebody's done speaking. So then the person will continue speaking, and then I just, you know, keep quiet. So it's not easy when you're just doing it over the phone. I mean, if we were face-to-face, like, you know, a lot of the TV shows, that's a different story, because then, you know, it's different kind of interaction, and you can see when somebody is, like, getting ready to say something. But we don't have that luxury. So, you know, I'm not sure that the way that you say it, David, and please don't take this the wrong way, but, you know, maybe, and I like, I'm not saying I don't like when you say, Ron, what are your thoughts on that? Or, you know, but maybe there's a different way of doing, of achieving the same end result. I'm not sure what it is, but, you know, that those are my thoughts.
Well, sometimes when I say, you know, I blast you out on your thoughts, I'm not sure whether you're ready to speak or not. So I just kind of say, you know, somebody, what are your thoughts? Or, you know, but, and I, my original vision was, you know, the barbershop. And in the barbershop, does it really matter that one person is talking over another person? Does that person gets their point in eventually? Or, I don't know. I kind of, that was my fallback.
Well, that's true. In a phone, it's kind of difficult, I think, and we're just doing it right now.
But in the barbershop, you're gonna still have people overlapping, and that's when one person gets a little bit loud and the other one shrinks down and then starts talking. So with something like this, if we have viewers listening, it's going to get garbled, and they're going to miss something, and then we're going to lose people coming back because we're always jumping on each other or cutting each other off.
That's true.
And you know something, when you're talking on the radio or on a cell phone or something like that, it's totally different than seeing a person visually or being around their spirit, because radio or on a cell phone is really theater of the mind.
Those are my comments. Other people have comments or anything about the show? Bruce,
David, is there any way we can get at least a visual component on Blog Talk like we had in our old mechanism?
You know, the Blog Talk has a Skype component, but when you go into usually my screen at the studio, it doesn't have, when you go into the studio, which is what they call it, the Skype thing is not there. So I know that they were working on it at one time, but I don't see it here. I'm looking at it now. It's not there. I think it's something they're working on, but not right now. Okay. Anybody else have any comments about the show? How can we make it more interesting? If I was to ask you one thing to make it more interesting, what would you tell me, Brent? Hello? Okay. Bruce?
I would say, even though politics and racial issues are tantamount in the news right now, our lovely bad news push, I think the Valentine's special we had last week or 2 weeks ago, whenever it was, when it was more lighthearted. We need to intermix some of those kind of Sunday discussions with the heavy. I think that was a refreshing reprieve.
Okay, but seems that we keep going back to those issues.
Yeah, I know.
And I think my overall original thought was that it would be more of a show that, like, we were talking to family members and friends, and not really a national platform voice, but more of a local voice. And although we're all over the nation, local, you know, I mean, things that dealt with people that could take something from this show the next day and talk about getting around the water to it. Those things that, you know, what did you buy? What are the gifts you're getting for Christmas? Is that a big deal? You know, those kinds of things rather than, but it seems that politics and race are the things that are hammering people's minds every day because that's all the news is talking about. And I kind of wanted to get the subset of, you know, people like we talked about today, you don't know your neighbors anymore. Why is that?
David, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Harold.
Go ahead, Harold.
I'm with him. And a variety needs to happen. And I'm gonna be today. You know, my church in Texas, they're doing a series on relationship. And today's topic was marital sex or sexual relations in the marriage. And it was point blank in the church, talking about what wives should do, what husbands should do in terms of sexuality, intimacy, and all that. So, you know, those type of things are happening in the barbershop. The sports is happening, the politics. So all of it, you know, because I know we've been going back with the race thing a lot because that's prominent in the election. But if we can add just a little bit more spice, we'll keep more people interested in listening. You know, we're all adults. It's an adult show. So baseball, marital issues, financial issues, those things, like you said, something that we want to help our community with keeps them coming back.
David?
Both we have, yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Harold.
No, you're good. I was finished.
What I was going to say, I agree with everything, but and here, I just did it again. I said I agree. I think if we added a person that is like, because for the most part, you know, we all agree on everything we talk about pretty much, with very few exceptions. I think if we added a person that's way out there in left field or right field or whatever field you want to call it, that that adds a little controversy and spices things up a little bit, I think that would be a good thing.
I have the perfect person.
There was a couple of people that I was trying to get in, but, they weren't able to get on. They were really very controversial. They would have had more controversial subjects, I think.
David, if you want, my father-in-law, he proclaims himself as a male chauvinist pig. His house is a dictatorship. He said, civil rights ruined America, not in a good way. So he is the typical person that we're looking for, who is the opposite of what we are.
You need to have him on the show, Harold. We need to get him
on
here.
I think he should be hired.
Last week he was listening when I was in Dallas, and we were talking about what a role of a man and woman is, and he said, tell him a woman's role is to mind her husband.
Oh.
I think we need to hire him.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So can we have him on next week? We need to get him on the show.
I will make sure he's on next week.
And then,
very, very smart man, very educated, political views, the whole nine. So you guys will enjoy having him on.
Then stand back, David. You'll have a traffic jam. And it'll be females.
good.
Can I add something, guys? It's more
mechanics than it is the essence of the program. Since we can't see each other, I was thinking maybe we ought to have an informal pecking order that if it looks like a dead spot's getting a little long, that the first one that whoever that is, let's say it's Harold, he'll jump in and keep it moving. If Harold isn't there, the second one might be Don, and he'll do it. So we don't have these ungodly long who talks next kind of moments.
I think I should be able to, I should tell everyone when people call in, when people call into the organization, I mean call into the show, I have the opportunity to go and talk to them one-on-one to see if I think they are viable to be callers. So when I do that, I'm not in the show anymore. So I go out, I come back in, I go out, I come back in. So sometimes when there's you don't hear me saying anything, it's because I'm not in. So someone needs to take the lead on that and jump in when I'm not able to talk.
You know something, David? David, you know something? The show is new. So we are evolving into content. We're talking about content now. And we don't have Nielsen or PPM to tell us what topics get the most listeners calling in or participating in the program. We don't have that ability yet. We have to really go on emotion and what we think is working and what's not working. And you might want to get a screener to field the calls prior to sending them to you. That would keep you more engaged with the show.
Right.
It's going to take time to evolve, David, and I think we're on the right track as far as your vision for the show, but we don't have a lot of tools like the meters to let us know, because after all, this show is designed to build audience. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
That's true.
So we're gonna have to take some of the things that I just mentioned into consideration.
Okay.
David, I'm just putting up at my meeting. I'm gonna go ahead and get off.
All right, sir. Thank you. Have a nice week.
You guys have a good evening. Bye bye.
Right. Okay. Well, let me let the rest of you go. I think I got it. I think if we, every show, spend about 5 or 10 minutes after the show just to critique what we talked about. But one of the things I do want to bring up is during the week and stuff, if you have topics in your mind you want to discuss, let me know. It seems that since we're going to continue with this, I'm the narrator type person, then you need to help me with what you want to talk about because I don't really know. And I start talking about the things that I have listed. But I know that you have things that you might want to talk about that might be more interesting than what I want to talk about. So I would appreciate it if during the week just text me, email me or something and say, let's talk about this, and I'll just note it down. And, you know, because I keep a book of everything we've discussed. So it would help me a lot to know what's on your mind and what you want to discuss, too. All right.
Deal.
I want to let everyone know. Anybody have any last comments they want to get in before we kick off?
Yeah, somebody everybody have a great. Everybody have a great coming week.
You too.
Yeah, likewise to everyone. Have a great week.
The best is yet to come, fellas.
Yes, I feel a song coming on. I feel a song coming on.
Uh-oh.
All right. Run for the hills.
Thank you, guys. I will see you and talk to you next week. If I get emails from me, let me know.
All right. Bye.
Good night, everyone.